Hector, I can't thank you enough for co-hosting, for putting the panel together. I'm grateful to our listeners. If you have any comments about these two shows, boy, we'll be doing some more. You know, this is a big topic, but we're interested in hearing from you. Feel free to send an email to rob@insidewashco.org, and we'll be hearing from you. You'll be hearing from us.
And I'm very thankful to our sisters, Lohi and Rosa. Rosa and Lohi, always nice to see you, my dear.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Mark Berry.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
And in fact, the people who study this say that, you know, conspiracy theories are not the product of a disordered mind, but in fact of a mind that's seeking to impose order on a very confused and troubled universe.
Today, Alex Wise of Sea Change Radio interviews Rolling Stone senior writer Tim Dickinson about his piece on the anti-vaxxer movement entitled How the Anti-Vaxxers Got Red-Pilled. What happens when a global pandemic, a vaccine resistance movement, and the age of conspiracy collide? A black hole of misinformation that poses a grave threat to public health. Here is Alex Wise.
I'm joined again by Rolling Stone senior writer Tim Dickinson.
Hey, great to be with you.
You have a new piece on Rolling Stone entitled How the Anti-Vaxxers Got Red-Pilled. So first, what is red-pilled?
It's a term that comes from The Matrix, and there's this famous scene where Keanu Reeves takes a red pill and accesses an alternative universe. And people who are red-pilled are sort of caught up in a conspiratorial worldview. And so we think associated with QAnon and sort of the whole QAnon conspiracy. But people on the left also can get red-pilled. And it's about sort of distrusting the mainstream culture and the mainstream explanations for things and embracing this sort of alternate reality where things have a darker explanation.
Yes, so we're at this critical point, not only in our democracy with believing in elections, but also in science, not only with climate change, but now with vaccines. And I was shocked to read in your piece how many Americans have what's called vaccine hesitancy. Why is this so important? We can't just think about ourselves in this. This is a community effort, isn't it?
Well, it really is a public health threat. So these, you know, the vaccines offer us a ticket out of this pandemic, right? And they're in, seen with clear eyes, they're sort of a medical miracle. But the thing about vaccination is it's not only protecting yourself, but it's about building up to what's called herd immunity, which means that there are enough people vaccinated that it creates sort of an insulation of dead ends, or like a firewall of dead ends around somebody who might be infected with the virus. So say somebody gets sick, right now they're passing it on to two, maybe three people. But the way that this would work is if somebody gets sick and most of the people around them are vaccinated, it can't spiral out of control and create a huge breakout. But you need, you know, a certain percentage. We still don't know exactly how many people need, you know, either a combination of they've had COVID or if they've gotten the COVID vaccine, but it's something close to 80%. You know, pretty high, like with measles. This is a really fairly contagious disease, and the variants are making it more so. So it's really vitally important that we get, you know, something like 8 out of 10 people to buy into the idea that they need a vaccination, even if they're not particularly at risk. They sort of need to take one for the team so that we can all be safer and all get back to normal, right? And that's the reward, that we can all go out, have a drink at the bar and not be worried that we're going to get somebody sick unintentionally.
And yet there was a Pew poll in December that found only 60% of Americans intend to vaccinate, and nearly 20% of Americans are dead set against it. So these people don't have polio. How have they become so grounded in this unreality?
I think it helps to understand a bit about what the anti-vax movement is. The idea that, you know, vaccines are somehow dangerous or somehow, you know, going to cause more harm than good is pretty pervasive. And you know, there's a lot of sort of cultural distrust around vaccines that sort of sprung up around the thimerosal controversy, where there was this idea that there was an unsafe amount of mercury in childhood vaccinations. And that has been definitively debunked by now, but that fear hasn't gone away. And as I talk about in the piece, it's sort of become unmoored from the science and started to find more sort of supernatural or conspiratorial explanations that, you know, in fact, it's Bill Gates is trying to rule the world with vaccinations and sterilize people or plant microchips in us. And these ideas are very fanciful, but they're powerful, and a lot of people believe them.
I remember reading Carl Sagan's The Demon-Haunted World, which he references a survey that shows that many more Americans believe in UFOs than they do in black holes. And that's just one example. There's many other scientific facts that Americans just couldn't seem to wrap their heads around. How do we kind of flip this narrative around for these people? Are we going to be able to convince them to get vaccinations so that this vaccination can be effective?
You know, I think it's unfortunately very much an open question right now. I think there is an idea that as more and more people, you know, get the vaccine and you see your friends and family get vaccinated and nothing terrible has happened to them, that you're going to, you know, the vaccine resistance and hesitance is going to diminish. You know, and it's important to notice that there are legitimate reasons why people have some fear about this vaccine, right? It's a novel vaccine. The technology is new. You know, it was developed very quickly. There was some partisan interference from the White House in terms of, you know, saying to the FDA, you approve this overnight or you're going to get fired. You know, and there are longstanding, you know, racial disparities and prejudice in our health system that, you know, the people who have been disproportionately impacted by this virus are also people of color or poorer communities that have been abused by our health system. And so those are sort of reasonable things that people can ask questions about, and I think there are reasonable answers to, right? That it is a new technology, but it's very elegant and there's no way to get sick from it. It seems to work well in all populations. If tens of millions of doses have been administered, people aren't getting sick from it. You know, the political pressures that were there are now gone. All indications are that these vaccines are safe and effective. And I think for a lot of people, just the seeing friends and family become protected and the promise of getting out and getting back to normal life will be a powerful draw. But there are people, you know, sort of dead enders who no longer see the world in a fact-based way. And for people who have bought into this conspiratorial worldview, who have red-pilled and sort of gone over to this unreachable state, where, you know, because part of what the QAnon ideology in particular says is like, oh, you're right not to trust that thing. You know, whatever you're concerned about, is it vaccines? Oh, well, vaccines are part of a much bigger picture, and you need to be distrusting everything. You need to be distrusting the media and the universities, you know, the politicians. They're all in it together. And it's that once you cross over into that state where the distrust is sort of globalized and you see that there's this dark cabal acting against you, that it's very hard to come back from that, or very hard to reach somebody in that state using, you know, what we as journalists are really accustomed to using, which is, here's the good information, just see, you don't have to be concerned. You know, and it's, of course, they see journalists as being part of the core constituency of the deep state. So it's a real challenge.
So, Tim, did you start researching this piece before the Dodger Stadium incidents happened or not?
No, yes, I did. This was sort of well in production when that happened, and that was sort of a proof positive of that this was a real world phenomenon, right?
Explain what that was, and then let's break it down a little bit.
Well, some people showed up, at Dodger Stadium where they were doing a mass vaccination clinic and saying, and actually succeeded in shutting it down for several hours, holding signs saying, Bill Gates, go vaccinate yourself, and Hank Aaron died from COVID, the COVID vaccine. And anyhow, all kinds of nonsense on the signs, but people who were steeped in this idea that the vaccines are not going to be promoting our health and welfare, but in fact a threat, managed to shut down a major vaccination site in LA at a time when LA was having horrible rates of transmission.
And I think millions of people around the globe who saw this thought to themselves, that's fine if you don't want to get a vaccine, but what is their motivation for wanting to stop other people from getting it? Like, I can understand to some degree the zaniness of the most virulent anti-choice activists who are picketing in front of abortion clinics because they think that that's murder. But why do they need other people to not get vaccines, I guess is the question.
If you're really bought into this worldview, you want to communicate it to other people, right? So if you really believe that Democrats are part of a secret cabal with the media and the universities and big pharma to poison people or to put tracking devices into them, and if you honestly believe that, then there's, it's not terribly difficult to understand why people are wanting to communicate that to others. I think one of the things is that it's like such an insular community and has its own language and its own, structure and makes sense only to the people who are immersed in it. So when it collides with the real world, it's very strange, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense. But one of the, it's been interesting to see how in these COVID times where people are sort of very much isolated, but also, interconnected through the internet and sort of unvetted sources of information, that this stuff has its own virality. It spreads, very easily, among people who are cooped up and have too much time on their hands and are frustrated and are looking for answers about, why is the world the way it is?
Yes, I can't help but refer to a recent New Yorker cartoon that I saw that had a kind of a pudgy guy sitting at his desk with a laptop. He's shouting to his partner in the other room. He goes, "Honey, come look. I found some information all the world's top scientists and doctors missed." And then I got an email from a friend and neighbor that invited me to a free webinar to learn more about COVID-19 vaccines. And I was intrigued, and so I followed it. And I was kind of horrified to see that this was the Children's Health Defense Organization, which was Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s. It was on his website, and he hosted this webinar. There was nobody there providing anything other than anti-vaccination ammunition. And some of them were just blatant untruths. Two people, one a doctor and one a lawyer, both said that there have been over 500 reported deaths already since December from the vaccine. First of all, we know that's not true, and that was not questioned by anybody on the panel. Let's go through some of the personalities that have kind of have evangelized the anti-vax movement. From a lot of people know a celebrity like Jenny McCarthy, et cetera. But Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is an interesting place to start, because I like his politics. He's an important environmentalist. He started the River Keepers in New York. Where did he kind of veer to this path? How?
He is an evangelist in this community and is trying to draw people together around this idea that, without any scientific proof to it any longer, but that vaccines are dangerous and that the people who promote vaccines have, an ulterior motive. And in reporting this piece, I confronted him about a piece of information that he's been promoting that's just categorically false. Like, it just relies on a bad reading of a paper. Wasn't happy about it, but eventually admitted that the way he was reading this wasn't correct.
Gates at one point talks about how this is a good way to control population issues in a healthy way. And the anti-vax movement has like run with that and kind of taken that out of context, that he's trying to kill us all and control us all and reduce populations.
And the point that gets twisted there is that if you get more children surviving childhood, you end up, parents make family planning decisions based on that, so that you, instead of having five kids and hoping that three of them survive, you can have, you know, a smaller family, three kids, and be more confident that you're going to be able to raise them to adulthood so that they can take care of you when you're an old person. And so the when Gates talks about vaccines as a mechanism to, you know, take population pressures off, he's not talking about vaccines as a vector for death or vaccines as a vector for sterilization. He's talking about improving childhood mortality rates and morbidity rates so that parents have more assurity that their kids are going to survive and can confidently have smaller families, and that's a rising tide that lifts their boats, right? That there's just less poverty, and it's a virtuous cycle. You can get really far down a rabbit hole, but again, it reminds me very much of trying to convince people who were categorically convinced that global warming wasn't a threat. It's nothing to worry about. You know, there's all these different explanations, and once you try and go down the rabbit hole and say, well, this, you know, I don't think this is actually true if you look at it this way, aha, but it's this other thing. And so you end up in this game of whack-a-mole where there's always some other explanation that makes the case, and you can't, even if you can come to agree that this fact is flawed, there's something else around the corner that clearly you as a global warming alarmist have just gotten incorrect. You haven't considered the solar flares.
You are listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Today, we are hearing from Alex Wise of Sea Change Radio and his conversation with senior Rolling Stone editor Tim Dickinson. They are discussing Dickinson's article about the anti-vaxxer movement and how people get drawn into conspiracy theories. Again, here is Alex Wise.
So, Tim, a lot of the anti-vax movement seems to point to freedom. And that's one of the issues that comes up from gun rights advocates. And freedom can be a talking point for both the far left and the far right. And it's one of the bedrock ideas of democracy. But it seems that it's being used in the vaccine example in a way that kind of paints those who believe in science as either nefarious or having some kind of dictatorial agenda.
I think it's really intriguing that in the people who have a jaundiced view of vaccination, in this sort of conspiratorial mindset, that it has adherence, you know, on the far right, where maybe you would expect it, the people who, you know, are convinced that they're coming for your guns, but also among people on the far left who are, you know, part of the naturopathic community, people who, you know, really distrustful of big pharma and only eat organic food and have sort of a more new age philosophy, also have this really intense distrust of, you know, what Michelle Bachmann called the government needle, right? This was came up in a presidential debate in 2011 where, you know, the zany Michelle Bachmann on the far-right conservative from Minnesota was ranting against, you know, forced vaccination from a government needle. And so these, it's interesting to explore what it is about both communities that is that they have in common. What is the, because it's really kind of confounding. We think of our political spectrum as far right and far left, and those people couldn't be further apart from each other. But in this particular case, they sort of loop around and kind of connect with this electrical spark in this sort of conspiratorial mindset.
This is Alex Wise, and I'm speaking to Rolling Stone's senior writer, Tim Dickinson. So I understand the history of communities of color being very suspicious of vaccines when you consider the horrors of the Tuskegee experiment. And yet, this vaccine fighting COVID-19 is not being widely accepted by African Americans. And I don't necessarily understand that. Do you think it's rooted in the Tuskegee experiment in that history? Because I was talking to my mother-in-law after she got her shots and explained to her how that there's not enough people getting vaccinated, the anti-vaxxers in Marin and the QAnon folks and also communities of color. And she was like, well, white people are taking this, so why would they be suspicious of it? I didn't have an answer for that.
I think if you're a person of color in this country, who you can see outcomes in terms of maternal mortality rates are basically twice as high for women of color. A lot of where we're seeing this early sort of vaccine hesitance is coming from the people who are eligible are long-term care and nursing home workers, but preponderance of whom are people of color. I think there's a lot of distrust, and I think some of it's warranted. And I think there's a real communication challenge and a public health challenge. But I don't, and communities of color, are also susceptible to misinformation. And so there's an overlap of these problems where, I think there are, I've seen some polling about people being worried that the vaccine is can cause sterilization.
It
absolutely does not, but there's no evidence to suggest that, but it's something that it's out there, right? And so if you're a young woman of color, maybe of modest education, and you're hearing rumors about this vaccine, that doesn't seem unreasonable to me. The stuff that's more unreasonable are the people who sort of choose this worldview and embrace it and celebrate it and make it sort of part of their cultural identity to be anti-vax or to be part of this QAnon culture. And I think that tends to be more of the, affluent Marin people and then the kind of people who are storming the Capitol.
I'm just confounded by how we've gotten to this age of misinformation when we have so much information at our fingertips.
Well, so what the people who study conspiracy theories told me is that there are several things that sort of correlate with conspiratorial belief.
Yes, Eric Oliver, I love this political science question that he gives. Can you kind of run us through some of those?
So the theory underlying this is that people who are more drawn to conspiracy theories are more intuitive thinkers. They think from the gut. They tend to place a high value on symbolic costs. And so to tease this out, the little questionnaire that he has, and it goes like this. Would you rather wear Charles Manson's laundered pajamas, or would you rather pick up a nickel that's been on the ground and put it in your mouth?
I like that one.
And so the idea is that the people who would prefer to have something with a real possibility of unpleasantness or actual harm, to avoid this sort of symbolic harm of like I'm this bad juju, basically I'm in Charles Manson pajamas, or I'm stabbing my family and something bad is going to happen to them. The people who have that high sort of intuitive thinking and that sense of like, oh, I need to avoid these symbolic costs, those are the people who have a high correlation to conspiracy thinking. What's interesting is that these are people who are susceptible to this, other pandemic which is going on, which is misinformation, right? I came away from this reporting with a real sense of compassion for people, because we tend to think, I think in pop psychology, the people who are, attracted to conspiracy theory are in fact like somehow, just off the deep end, or they're just kind of kooky, or just, it's a disordered sort of thinking. And in fact, the people who study this say that, conspiracy theories are not the product of a disordered mind, but in fact of a mind that's seeking to impose order on a very confused and troubled universe, right? And so they find connections and find a way of explaining things that isn't necessarily based in reality, but it provides sort of emotional management. It makes them less anxious about the world. They may believe something really terrible is happening, right? That in addition to this vaccine, this pandemic, we have this secret cabal of child molesters who are running the world, and it's Jeffrey Epstein and it's Hillary Clinton and it's Democrats and everybody's in on it, right? It's this horrible way of thinking about the world. But knowing that, at least that gives you a hook to like, oh, this is why I feel anxious. This is why I feel terrible, because there are evil people out there who are out to get me. Not only does that sort of, make you feel calm, but then you sort of have this culture around it where you're sort of in on it, and you know something that other people don't know, and that's its own sort of thrill and reward. So it's sort of self-reinforcing in that way, and so people get something out of it, even though it may cost them relationships with people that they value, and it helps me make sense of why this stuff can be so addicting.
So Tim, we see people from the evangelical community leaders from the evangelical community who used to deny climate change see the inextricable truths of climate change and then turn the other way and become great warriors for fighting climate change. How do we, what are the best methods that we can employ to kind of get people to come back from the anti-vax world?
Well, you know, and again, it's this sort of, it's this mix-up between the anti-vax people and the Q people, where you have this, like, where the anti-vax, the, you know, the people poisoning you with vaccines, so-called, you know, no evidence for that, but in this worldview, the vaccines are an agent of the powerful people who are controlling the world and trying to control you and deprive you of your freedom. So if you've gone down that particular rabbit hole, and there are millions of people who have gone down that kind of rabbit hole, how do you come back? Those people who I think are sharing on Reddit forums now and sort of creating kind of like QAnon support groups, like QAnon Anonymous is some like a shorthand for it. So it becomes more like cult deprogramming or substance abuse recovery. And I think there actually needs to be some public investment in this, because I don't know that we can count on that organically leading people out in the same numbers. But those pathways seem open and like something that people, as a matter of public policy, could support, you know, to bring people back with a mixture of good information and compassion. I think part of the trick here is that people see themselves as looked down on. You know, the people who are drawn to this stuff often see themselves as looked down on or mocked in some way. And it's hard to welcome people back at the same time that they feel like they're being shunned or marginalized or laughed at. And so it's just a tricky proposition.
Tim's piece on RollingStone.com is called How the Anti-Vaxxers Got Red-Pilled. Tim Dickinson. Tim, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to a discussion about the anti-vaxxer movement produced by Alex Wise of Sea Change Radio. Thanks to featured guest, Rolling Stone senior editor Tim Dickinson. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Brian David at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
Support for the Dirtbag and KBOO Community Radio comes from our members and from One Green World, a family-owned and operated nursery off Southeast Foster on 134th Avenue in Portland.